Last time on Faith Uncut.
When we talk about liberation, we tell people just walk away. Just leave. You don't have to be in that environment. So when we look at Michelle Williams, we say, hey, girl, there's a red flag. Go. When we look at queer people within denominations like Kojic, we say, hey, you need to go. But we also forget that sometimes people stay in these situations where they are oppressed because they're looking for community, they're looking for love, and they're looking for acceptance. Mm-hmm. And if they leave that, there's a fear of what they will lose if they leave those spaces because that's familiar. And so sometimes we stay in familiar oppression because we don't want to walk into this idea of liberated freedom, unfamiliar liberated freedom.
So, yes, we have to talk about the cost of liberation. So this is it. Yeah, it's easy to discuss this as if, okay, this trauma was inflicted. I'm out. That's not the way it works, because usually that trauma is inflicted by someone that you care about. Mm-hmm.
Or you have some relationship.
Right. It's not just some random person on the street. Sometimes it is, but mm-hmm. that's an easy one to walk away from. Mm-hmm. It's not so easy when you're in relationship with that person. You're invested into that entity, that religious entity, or that, mm-hmm. that or maybe your paycheck depends on it.
Yes.
And it's not so easy to walk away from. Right.
Or your identity is directly linked to it. So it's like, let us be clear. You know, we're talking about marginalized groups and people who we can literally see the foot on their neck. But when people do stay in place, I feel like people think revolution is this event-based boom. It is not always that. Sometimes revolution and resistance are the small things that over time build up mm-hmm. to a bigger thing. So you don't get wholesale movement forward without there being individuals who stand in the gap, without there being people who literally, you know, like we say, they're in the trenches. Right. And that's the position that they've taken, because they're going to lift over their backs and push you forward. Whatever work they're doing in that gap space, not only does it have to be done, but that is what that longer game, that marathon that we talk about, right? So we say it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. Well, that's the marathon. The marathon, when we talk about women's rights and women's groups, the Seneca Convention was in the 1840s. Mm-hmm. You don't have the 20th Amendment with women voting until the 1920s or 1919. So over time, there are people who are in the gap, who are doing that work. Why? Because we're talking about wholesale change as far as gender roles. We're talking about empowering women within the sphere that they found themselves in at the time, which was for family and children, and creating these new opportunities to fill other roles, to be seen a different type of way. So you're going to have your mm-hmm. first nurses, your first medical school students, you're going to have your college graduates. All of that is happening before they double back to give women the right to vote. That's important work. The same thing is going to happen with other groups, as far as you talk about with African Americans and the bonding and the fact that our history is not just ours. Speaking of this country in particular, it's not just ours. So when we had an American Revolution, immediately there were people who created something called revolutionary theory. Revolutionary theory said, how can y'all agitate for freedom while you're trying to build an mm-hmm. enslaved society? That was 1776.
Questions that still need answers.
Okay. Still need answers, but 1776 to 1861 to 65, that's the gap between that time and a civil war. Then you're going to have 1865 to 1954 with Brown before we really are like, okay, seriously, I need you to do something about the amendments that you passed almost 100 years ago. So in that time, in that gap, you have these examples of people pushing their boundaries and pushing the needle forward, asking the questions that kind of force the wholesale movement of society from point A to point B. And we're still not there yet, but we just have to, you know, stop looking for the shock and the awe, because it's happening every day. We don't even have the midterms that we have in 2018 if people did not immediately start working the day after the 2016 election to make certain things so.
when we first recorded this, we weren't sure where that was going to go. And now we're on the other side looking at it. But before we go too far down here, I think we need to back up a little bit, because we're into the action side of it, but we also jumped right into communicating that it's, but what we haven't done is to talk that internal language yet. And that's your first line of defense. Yep. Well, your liberation starts in your mind to say, okay, this is not going to work for me.
Right.
And not in a casual way. Nope. This is a rock bottom.
Yep.
No more of this. This is not happening anymore.
I'm done.
And what happens from that is you have to say that so violently to yourself to say, this will not stand.
Yes.
So that by the time it comes out, it's not going to be the watered down version. It's going to be the real version, the version that you needed to get you moving out of the situation. And so that is something that we should not dilute when that message comes out, because that's the way it needs to be heard.
It has to. I taught a sociology class called the Sociology of Historical Trauma. And one of the things that I had the class read was a piece by Audre Lorde called The Transformation of Silence into Language and Action. And I want to share just a few things from that, because I think, Mike, that your point around that internal dialogue, Audre nails it so well. And so she says, you know, I've come to believe over and over again that what is most important to me must be spoken, made verbal and shared, even at the risk of having it bruised or misunderstood. She said, I begin to recognize a source of power within myself that comes from the knowledge that while it is most desirable not to be afraid, learning to put fear into a perspective gave me great strength. So she's already saying that, like, the things that we're internalizing, we have to speak them and we have to share them, even if people get upset, they get in their feelings, they get bruised or misunderstood, because she said she recognized that the power that she had, it came from within herself to be able to push past the fear, and that gave her the strength. And then she says, what are the words you do not have yet? What do you need to say? What are the tyrannies that you swallow day by day and attempt to make your own until you will sicken and die of them still in silence? And so she's asking the reader, what are the things that you swallow every single day? What injustices? What are the microaggressions? What are the macroaggressions? What are the abuses at society? What are the abuses at systems? What are the abuses that people and relationships have caused you? What are those? And then she says, these tyrannies that you swallow day by day will attempt to make your own. So you internalize them and say to yourself, this is my fault, or I should be less this, or I should be more that, or maybe I shouldn't say this. And you will literally get sick from them and die, and you will die still not communicating what you need. And so she says, on that silence, each of us draws our own fear. We have fear of contempt, fear of censure, fear of judgment, recognition, of challenge, of annihilation. But most of all, we fear the visibility that we cannot truly live. And so she says then to the reader, we have to learn. Well, before she says that, she says, each of us is here now because in one way or another, we share a commitment to language and to the power of language and to the reclaiming of that language, which is made to work against us. So she's telling the reader that, hey, language is being used to oppress us. And so we have to now take that language and turn it around and redirect it so that we can transform the silence into language and action. She says, it is vitally necessary to teach by living and speaking those truths which we know beyond understanding. She's saying that even in our language, we know, even if we don't say anything, that we have this lived experience that we understand. And it's up to us to use our words to put language to it so that people can understand it. That's where the strength comes in.
That is so powerful. What are the words that you do not have? I mean, that's the way it works. You experience things before you can express them.
Yeah.
You feel them before you articulate them. Yeah. And that dissonance that's created when you feel or experience that trauma leads to the development of that language and the formation of what your liberation begins to look like. It is describing, okay, I'm getting out of this. This is what I'm feeling with this. Mm-hmm. And then now what I'm about to do. Mm-hmm. And that is such a powerful affirmation that this is, yeah, you don't stop with the words.
It's like building yourself up. It's building your internal strength to kind of carry out whatever you hope your physical can follow up with. Because if your mind or if you believe or never challenge what other people have told you about yourself or about your position or about your group, you have no reason to agitate for anything better because you just believe it as it's been served to you.
Right.
It's only when you reach an imbalance of like when you say, what are the tyrannies that you're swallowing every day? You will literally get full and sick off of those things. So there are people who have separated from their old churches because they literally couldn't take examples like what that woman did at that Kojic service anymore. And they've left and they've released that bad energy and that bad food for better things. So looking for a better source of God's love in different places. And if we hadn't have had to leave those buildings that are not bigger than the God that we serve, you know, just to make that point, I think that we talked a lot about church hurt and separation. These things start with language. These things start with the words that I use to describe who you are and how I see you. So when I think about some of the more damaging things that have been said to women in an effort to keep them bound to nothingness, honestly, I mean, we could talk about purity culture and, you know, always pining for a baby and a man or whatever you're going through. Like, you're a whole person before your first interaction with a romantic partner. And a lot of people are not taught that. They don't understand that. But it's for those women who could not continue to sit in the same posture. And the men, too, who supported them, who said, yo, you are so much more than this. That's why we have the books that we have. That's why we have the examples that we have of people moving the theology forward, because they challenged that. Mm-hmm. They said, I cannot be in this position anymore. It's the same thing with how do you move a whole society? How do you move 4 million people out of enslavement? How do you do that? Except on a personal level, someone was telling the children. Like, I just believe in the romanticism of that, but it's also the reality. You're more than this. That is a seed that can continue to grow for the rest of your life. You're more than what you've experienced up to this point. How do you move a whole gender group toward anything that looks remotely like equality or anything that remotely looks like equity? You're more than this. There's something bigger at play.
That self-affirmation is so important. I mean, it's good to have your friends do it, your family do it, but there's something about it.
Yeah,
it's hard to really believe it as fully as you need to when it's someone else. It's when you do it. You're the one that believes you. And so if you can say those things about yourself, then you start to get that, you ignite that spark that you need to actually start moving.
Right.
And so, yeah, so now, I mean, we can get into the action of liberation, because we know that if we've affirmed ourselves, we know what we will and will not take or stand for, then we can start to articulate that to those around us, to those that oppress us, to those who may be potential allies. Then we can actually start to put that into action, because what else it takes to liberate 4 million slaves is blood.
Okay.
Yeah.
We still shed.
Blood has been shed on every, okay, for every movement. And I think that people who try to have this rose-colored glasses view, this glass half-full view, that our society is somehow more peaceful than it is, are really doing themselves a disservice. I don't know whose history they know, but it is not American history. We shake tables over here.
Jesus turned them over, so hey, you know.
Okay.
You know, in that same piece, Audrey says, she says, we can learn to work and speak when we are afraid, in the same way we have learned to work and speak when we are tired. For we have been socialized to respect fear more than our own needs for language and definition. And while we wait in silence for the final luxury of fearlessness, while we wait for the right moment to say, I will liberate myself, while we wait for the right moment to say, they're going to get it, I'm going to keep telling myself or telling these people this thing, I'm going to keep doing this emotional, intellectual, heavy lifting for these people,
She says, while we wait in silence for the final luxury of fearlessness, the weight of that silence will choke us. And so I think the question that I walk away from this within is, instead of choking, what is our only option? And I think, as Mike, you've said, an only option now is liberation. So what are we liberating ourselves from? And what are we liberating ourselves to? That's the question. Because we can't, if we're not going to let this weight choke us, then what are we moving towards? Because I think it's really easy to sit in, I'm oppressed, but what are we trying to move towards?
So that depends on the type of oppression you are experiencing.
Right.
So let's say, for instance, I'm oppressed in my workplace and I'm not getting any relief from HR. I'm not getting any relief from my supervisor or chain of command or whatever that leadership chain is. Mm-hmm. I'm being liberated from maybe that job to hopefully another job and not to poverty because I don't have a job anymore. But like, that's a different type of liberation than if I'm extricating myself from a relationship.
But people do it all the time, you know, and again, they have to tell themselves that there's something better. And then you plan, you know, this is why I said it's not always the event-based boom. There's some planning that goes into that, right? So I've recognized it's enough. And now I'm saying, all right, y'all don't appreciate me here. Y'all are treating me like a Cinderella or whatever it might be. So I'm just going to go to these trainings and build my skill set and make it so that, you know, right under your nose, I'm going to train myself right out of this situation. That is a way to invest in yourself to prepare yourself for the next thing. So we see examples of that. We see examples of people investing in themselves relative to whatever their situation was and planning their escape from, you know, a tyrannical situation to something that they believe that would be better, whether it's migration, moving from one area to another under the belief that opportunities will be better or the environment will be better. We see it in, you know, leveling up, skill investment and moving on to different things. Group behavior, when you just recognize, like, I think the Democratic Party is it's growing, it's moving, but it's also in shambles for real because people are challenging the status quo within the party that's supposed to be more progressive, right? But it's a good thing to do. I think it's good to reflect back and say, okay, so what are you really doing? What do you really consist of? Right. What does this platform really mean? We've had 30 years since the Clintons and we've been able to see, we might have messed some things up back then. The same Democratic Party. Yeah. So now, you know, when we see the highest turnout in an election and we see, you know, states that are former slaveholding states in contention for the governorships, you know, at least, and we're talking about the rule of law. We're not talking about what people want to do. We said that before. But when we see this happening, it's important because it's like, here are the small things. Here are the small tremors that lead us forward. We don't get there with an Abrams who doesn't believe in herself. We don't get there with a Gilliam who doesn't believe in his platform. We don't get there with, you know, without strong leaders who are like, I'm willing to take that risk and bring a lot of people with me.
Historically, there's been a dichotomy of liberation. On one side, you have separation, and on the other side, you have integration. We see this with Marcus Garvey and W.E.B. Du Bois, where Garvey is separation, Du Bois is integration. We see this with Martin and Malcolm. Martin is integration, Malcolm is separation. Mm-hmm. And these are value judgments that occur when you're trying to determine what is my path to liberation. It's not always racial liberation. It could be any time. But separation versus integration is a decision that needs to be made, because separation seems ideal because, you know, I could, yeah, I don't have to deal with this anymore. But like in the case of Malcolm, who wanted to separate, separation is not always realistic because where you going to go, Malcolm? You want your own land. Where you going to end up? What land is not taken? What land is not occupied where you would have to also be the oppressor moving into that land?
Right.
So
perspective.
And then integration, you know, that may be a temporary solution for you. That may be something that you work towards as a long-term goal. Mm-hmm. Say, okay, we can figure this out and be together. Or we can be together now while I execute my plan to separate or do whatever. But those are two of the big decision points that seem to always be in play, whether it's I'm separating from my church, or I'm integrating into my church, mm-hmm. or I'm separating from this job or this relationship.
I feel like things have their season, though. I feel like you have seasons where you're going to walk alone and figure out exactly what your point and perspective is. If you've spent your whole life in an oppressed situation, I'm not sure that you are really adept at centering yourself and understanding exactly what your needs and your perspective and your desired outcomes really are. And separation, for lack of a better term, isolation, just some alone time to figure out whatever that is valuable before you begin to, you know, piece it back together again. That makes sense to me.
Baldwin went to France. Josephine Baker traveled to Paris. Yeah, so it is, separation does help.
It does.
But that may not be the end goal.
And I think one thing, Mike, to your point around this idea of separation or integration, is that when you're doing this, so, you know, I think there's some strategy that has to happen, right? In terms of what you're going to do. But I think the one thing that we have to keep in mind when we're working towards liberation is knowing that while you're trying to do the liberation, your job is never to have to prove yourself and the reasons why you need said liberation. Okay. Toni Morrison talked about racism, and she says, know the function, the very serious function of racism, which is distraction. And I think that we can insert any oppression into this, right? She says it keeps you from doing your work. It keeps you explaining over and over again your reason for being. Somebody says you have no language, and so you spend 20 years proving that you do. Somebody says your head isn't shaped properly, so you have scientists working on the fact that it is. Somebody says you have no art, so you drudge that up. Somebody says that you have no kingdom, so you dredge that up. None of that is necessary. And so when I read that, I think about whether it's a religious space and you're trying to gain autonomy in that, whether it's in a relationship with a person who doesn't see you for who you are and love you for the way you need to be loved, you know, whether it's in a work transaction, in a business thing, your job is never to prove to the person who may be exercising power over you that you're worthy, because you're worth. You're worthy because you're worthy. You're enough because you're enough. You don't have to prove that. That's already there. So I think the best way to harvest that energy is to then determine, all right, I'm not going to be in this. So what do I do next? And I think sometimes, even if we do the separation, it's always good to have at least one person that we can have in our corner, whether that's going to be the divine, whether that's going to be a friend or a family member. But it's always good to have somebody to be a safe landing spot, because as much as we want to say, yo, go get free, it's lonely. It's hard. There's going to be moments where you feel like you're losing your mind because you don't know if what you want is necessary. Like, is it that bad? Is it that bad? And so it's always good to know that there is a person, there is a force behind you as you seek to liberate and break the chains off of yourself.
I can't think of a time historically or otherwise where liberation was a road that was traveled completely alone. Like that, that you can't do that. That is too much because you have to, whether you need an ally or not to help to break free, you're still going to need someone to hold you up, and you're still going to need someone to talk through and say, okay, you did the right thing, or you're going to be okay. I can help you out with this. So maybe you can stay here, or like you need something, or you need someone else. And so that's why that language is also important, because once you start to articulate that, you can tell your story. You can at least let them know what's going on with you, why this was required. I've even been in some situations where some people lied to me. Like, you know how you try to tell someone, they tell you about their relationship and you know they just lying. But, you know, it's more to it than this. But whatever. You're trying to get free. I got you. But it's one of those things where you just cannot, like you said, Nick, you can't do this thing alone. Like, this is not something you wouldn't even want to do this alone, because once you get out there away from everything that you were with, and now it's just you, or maybe it's just you and your children, or maybe it's just you or whatever. Right. Like that's moving into a
newness. It's a new space. It's probably indicative of a major shift in your thoughts and your perspective, and perhaps reflects some investment that you've made on your intellectual landscape. You know, you might be reading more and you just find that you can't operate the same. It's like when you learn new information, right, you can't act like you don't know it. So sometimes that new information is actually paying attention to that voice that is telling you that enough is enough. Or the new information is knowing that you're in a new environment and you have to adapt to it. You can't keep resisting the fact that you need to change. But all in all, like you guys were talking, and I was sitting here thinking about the Book of Eli. Like,
yes.
Even in that movie, where he was, you know, because I'll never forget the first time I saw it. I was like, oh, my God, it was the Bible. But I thought about
it was a nice spoiler.
Come on. Like, seriously, it'll still be good. But I just think that the fact that, you know, he literally held the word close to his heart, but he was also protecting its misuse, because somebody wanted to use it to oppress people in this, you know, harsh dystopian world. And when it all kind of came together, like Mila's character wasn't, you know, major, but she was that helping hand. Like, you can actually finish the work that was started in you. And I'm not going to do it for you, but I'll be your companion. It was important. It was her own story. And she by no means was as faithful as him. She was not as, I don't think that she really felt like her life had value, but just that example from what you're saying, like, you're going to go and you, and it might be arduous, but there will be someone, you know, even if you feel like it is God, or if it is actually, you know, a tangible person in your life, somebody's going to be in your cheering section. And that's important.
Yes. Previously, as a therapist, you know, there's a lot of times where you give theoretical suggestions to people. But in this conversation, this is something that I've lived in terms of walking away from things, ideas, people, and relationships that didn't affirm where I was and who I was becoming. And so I think it's really easy to focus on what do you lose to get free and liberated? Because there's a loss, right? There's a loss for me. There was a loss of friendships. There was a loss of relationships. There was a loss of work, you know, which means a loss of money. There was a loss of status and influence. Yep. And I can think about it, and I can sit and bemoan what I was losing and as I was working to get free. But what I did know inside of me was this voice that was saying that I had to aggressively remove everything that wasn't germane to who I was becoming. And so I think the most important thing in all the ways that you find loss, or all the ways that you have loss and you experience loss, is that you find yourself. And so for me, my voice, not the voice of the system, not the voice of the Bible creeds, not the voice of what I had been taught, not the voice of any of those things, the voice that became the loudest was mine. And my intrinsic voice, which I believe is my spirit, became my guide. And so I think that in terms of liberation, our goal for liberation is to silence systems and dogmas and creeds and traditions that are not who you are, because your liberation is worth more than all of those things.
The scary thing is, what's on the other side of this? I know I don't like this, but I'm going to walk away from all of this stuff and I may have nothing. I may have no one in my corner. I may have none of the safety net that I've enjoyed. We're talking about it holistically, and it's almost as if we're stepping outside of time and saying on one side it's trauma and on the other side is liberation, but you don't always know that liberation's on the other side. That's something that you have to almost take and believe that that's worth taking a step. Even if it's not on the other side, I'm not staying here.
Exactly.
And that's the scariest part, not knowing that this is going to be successful.
Right. Well, I think that makes liberation your North Star. You might not know exactly where all you're headed and you know what the next obstacles might be, but I just don't think that it can be extinguished once that fire is lit within you. Because when you start moving, I don't know what would make you stop. I don't know what would make you stop except reaching a point of satisfaction or contentment with whatever the new situation has become.
So I think we've gone through a lot of the stages of liberation, but it starts with naming that reality. It starts with knowing this is real for me. Mm-hmm. And
words mean,
and I may make it real for you. And I think we just need to make sure that we understand that it is okay to center ourselves, because there will be many of people and non-entities on the outside trying to center themselves in the situation as you begin to articulate what's going on with you. Be try to bring it back to, you know, something that's not you, something that's not the problem. And it's important to be diligent in making sure that you are at the center of your story of your liberation.
Yeah.
Because it's not happening any other way.
I think that, I think the last thing I want to say in this is that as we talk about liberation, I think sometimes we stay in these systems, as I talked about before, for comfort or community or because we're familiar with it, or, you know, I got to stay with this man because we've been together for 13 years or 37 years or 52 years. You know, I need to stay at this job because I'm close to retirement, but we aren't happy and we're miserable. I got to stay at this church because mama went here and my grandma went here. And this is, we've been here. This is the church we've been in. And you continue to go through those tyrannies that you swallow every day. I want to say that your strength is not measured by your capacity to endure suffering. Say that again. Your strength is not measured by your capacity to endure suffering. You have to reach deep into the reservoir of courage inside of you and harvest the power that's there. Because I think a lot of times as we're swallowing the tyrannies, we're also gaining strength. And I think because it's abuse, and I'm not saying it's the best way to gain strength, but we're gaining strength. And the goal is not to sit there and choke under the oppression. The goal is to harvest the power that is inside of you and liberate yourself. And I don't promise that it's going to be an easy road, but I can guarantee you that as you begin to come home to yourself, as your voice becomes louder, as your spirit becomes your guide, that wholeness and joy and freedom will become yours. But you have to go get it. You have to go get it.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I don't have anything to say after. I'm just like, look, I'm straight. I feel liberated right now. Man, look, I do really appreciate you for coming to help us walk through this, because I think this is an important situation or topic to discuss because of what we see going on, what's going on in our own lives individually that doesn't have anything to do with what's going on in the world, just in our own private corners. And we need to be reminded. We need to be affirmed. And so thank you for helping us do that. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
This is Nick.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.
Is your apartment on fire?
I'm just
totally, I don't want you to die making this podcast. I want you to be
the one next door. No. I'm trying to have a closing thought and this is not happening. No. No. The building next door might. The building down the street is probably. I'm good.